This week on Pop of Culture, the business of art.
And so I very quickly started my own website, and that became the long uphill climb because I did not have sales after that. It took a long time.
Local artist and business owner Carrie Wright takes us through her journey from an Etsy shop to a brick and mortar studio space.
And we'll ask a muralist how they go from concept to paint on the wall. Coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. This week, we're listening back to some of our favorite interviews.
Coming up, we learn where a local muralist goes to practice spray painting walls.
But first, here's Carrie Wright, who paints silks and owns a business in downtown Muncie.
Carrie, thank you for joining us on Pop of Culture.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about your art journey. When did it all begin for you?
Well, at birth, like it does for all of us. I've always been a creative person, and I grew up way out in the country in northern Delaware County, surrounded by cornfields with a west-facing bedroom window. So every sunset lit up my bedroom in bright orange. Orange is still my favorite color, by the way.
I love orange.
So I was just surrounded by the beauty of nature, enough darkness at night to see all of the stars in the sky. Mm-hmm. It was just a really magical way to grow up, and grew up with creative people in my life, people who worked with their hands. My mom sewed many, many things for me growing up, including quilts for my bed and quilts that I still have to this day, garments, you know, just special things. So being creative was just part of the air that I breathed. I didn't become a professional artist until 2018. That's not to say that that's when I started silk painting, but mm-hmm. I did not throw my hat in the ring and throw caution to the wind to take that big leap of faith until 2018. And that really happened as a result of having explored every other avenue in life that was completely unfulfilling and being thoroughly convinced that I would never be happy if I didn't try.
Oh,
you get to a certain age where fear of failure falls off. Mm-hmm. I'd been very humbled by life. I'm not afraid for people to see me fail miserably. You know, I just don't have any pride about that anymore. And there's nothing to lose and everything to gain by trying. And I haven't looked back.
Wow. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that are relating to what you're saying right now. So tell me a little bit about how you did it. Once you decided, this is it, I have to do this, or else I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. I'm jumping in head first. How did you do it?
The first thing, and I think the most important thing to mention is that at the time, and still to this day, actually, my husband had enough income that my art career, there was no pressure on my art career to pay our bills. Mm-hmm. That was covered by the work that he was doing. And we live very, very small. And that is my first point of advice for all artists who want to be professional artists is you need to be prepared to live very, very small. Mm-hmm. So don't buy brand new flashy cars and don't buy the biggest house in the neighborhood and don't think you're going to go on vacation every year because you're not. And, you know, you have to learn how to be content in small circumstances and mm-hmm. humble means. And, you know, a dollar can go a really long way in Muncie.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that was the first way that I did it, was I did not have financial pressure on my art to immediately start earning a living and paying my bills. The second thing that I did was first to start an Etsy shop, which only lasted about 3 months. But being on Etsy allowed me to gauge interest in what I was making, which at the time was silk painted scarves, because that's the easiest product to create as a silk painter. And I did all my homework, meaning I did the deep dive, learning how the algorithm inside of the Etsy programming works in order to garner attention. You have to run ads on Etsy. There are all kinds of things you have to do to make Etsy show your products to the right people. And I did all that. And I quickly sold everything that I made, which is not saying a lot because I only had 3 scarves. And so I you know, it was a little test case. I kept painting. And the second point is, you have to work really hard. So it's important that you love what you're doing, and that you're passionate about the process, not the outcome. Because you have to be willing to work and work and work and work with no results in terms of applause or sales or visibility or likes on Facebook or followers or anything like that. You have to love the work, and you have to be willing to work a lot harder than what you see people with a 9-to-5 job working. And you're working like that because you love what you're doing.
Right.
And if you don't love working that hard as an artist, you might want to rethink it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you did start seeing some results, right?
I did. I sold the first 3 scarves that I posted within a week. I took a big step back and thought, well, okay, this might just be early success, but this might be all I need to know. So I quickly spent the money from what I had made off of those 3 scarves. Those 3 scarves paid for a website. And developed my own website on Wix. There are lots of great website builder tools that if you have an ounce of creativity, you should be able to. I'm sorry for all those website builders out there who get paid to do this, but as a creative person, you ought to be able to at least throw together a decent enough e-commerce website for yourself that you can start selling your own things so that you're not paying Etsy all the fees. And it's important too to build your own following. Build yourself a local following. Make sure that you're not giving your clients away to, you know, all the other people that are on Etsy with you. And so I very quickly started my own website, and that became the long uphill climb because I did not have sales after that. It took a long time to build the audience on the e-commerce website and to start trudging up the hill of going it alone. So there was immediate, small, very micro success, but it was a drop in the bucket to keep me encouraged and to keep me swinging for the fences.
Yeah, I don't think people, and thank you for sharing that, because I don't think people really realize that doing the art is one thing, but then there's also the whole business side of it. There's marketing and accounting and budgeting and all those things that have to happen if you want to get your art out there and get some sort of return on your amazing and huge investment that you're putting into your art. And that's a lot when you think about it, especially for artists who may not know anything about the business side, which I'm guessing is probably, you know, most artists. they're over here in the creative lane, and they're like, wait, what? I have to do all of this business stuff now too?
Exactly. And it is the one big difference of what I'm thankful for in terms of my own career path is that even though I was very much unfulfilled when I was working in corporate America, there are a lot of business skills that I picked up that that make me a unique artist in the sense that I have as much ease speaking to CEOs in boardrooms of Fortune 500 companies as I do sitting in my studio, not speaking for 2 days while I finish an art piece.
Yeah.
So I understand that is not most artists and that is unusual. Mm-hmm. And I'm incredibly blessed in that sense to have had that long meandering road that I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It all led you to a wonderful place. Yeah, it absolutely did. Tell us a little bit about your studio in downtown Muncie.
In 2023, after having a successful Christmas time pop-up shop in 2022, I found the space that is directly above the caffeinery in the historic Murray Building downtown at 405 South Walnut Street. And haven't looked back. I found the space in January. I started renovations and quickly opened Valentine's Day of 2023. And it is a combination gift shop, gallery, studio space, and classroom space, not just for me, but for my husband also, mm-hmm. Dan, who is a formerly syndicated professional cartoonist and to this day is a freelance artist. The space is unique in that it's broken up in such a way internally that it's easy to see through all of the work areas so that as people walk through the door exploring the gift shop, they can easily take a peek at the art that I'm currently working mm-hmm. on, at the process of making that art. And that's an important component to me because I want the community to feel welcomed in an mm-hmm. An active art studio, and in that way to demystify the making of art, that it's not a bibbity bobbity boo kind of circumstance where we wave a magic wand and, you know, beauty comes out the other end. It's a messy process. It's a laborious process sometimes. It's a frustrating process sometimes, but I'm really big into education and community involvement and want to welcome the public, which is why I keep regular business hours. There is a small gift shop here for the purpose of helping to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. That's my short-term business model. It helps fund my studio so that my studio gives me everything that I need in terms of the space required to do the making of what I'm trying to make, but doesn't actually cost my household budget any money because, right. again, we live very small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah, that's great. And I love the idea of the classes, and it really fits that whole idea of people being welcome and yes. feeling like, oh, you know, I can do this. I can do, you know, some art on my own. So talk a little bit about the classes that you offer.
I offer a silk painting for beginners class. It is a $50 one-day experience sort of a class, and it is not a paint-by-number paint along with me. We all paint the same thing. Mm-hmm. I prepare the artwork on the silk ahead of time, and there are usually 6 or 7 different designs for the students to choose from, so everyone has their own project. You're working on a square, a 22-inch silk square, and everything that you're accomplishing gets accomplished the day that you come. So there's not a 4-weekend commitment or anything like that. It's just a 1-day experience. And it's fun. It's relaxing. It's very colorful. I've had a lot of people come and say, wow, this feels so good. Mm. This is so peaceful. Yes. And my joke is always, well, that's why I'm not on any medications. It is very peaceful.
My medication is silk painting. I love that.
That's right.
Yeah. And it has to feel good welcoming people into your studio and then seeing the joy that they get out of it, just like the joy that you get out of it.
That is an incredibly mm-hmm. rewarding experience. And it's a human connection that I love.
Yeah.
there is a moment in every class that I'm looking for, and it always happens, where if I shut up, eventually everyone else will just kind of fall silent. And for many minutes, sometimes up to 10 or 15 minutes, no one will speak. They'll just all be working quietly at what they're doing. But everyone is doing their own thing. Everyone's using their own colors on their own design that they've chosen. Mm-hmm. It's very sunny in this space, even on a rainy day, thanks to the massive 12 gorgeous windows in here.
Yeah.
And it's a quiet human moment. There's a connection that we all make, human to human, through art as the medium, that no words are needed, and there's just reflection and quietness, and frankly, it has caused happy tears for some.
Not
sad tears, but quiet, happy, thoughtful tears, and those are special moments.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And it seems like there are a lot of special moments, special opportunities in that building, because there are a lot of artists that have kind of called the Murray Building home. And I know that they're on social media now. There is an Art at the Murray Facebook page that wants to get the word out about that. And something tells me you have something to do with this social media effort. Am I right? Right, Carrie?
Yeah. Whether I wanted it or not, I'm actually secretly a hater of social media. I really would not be on social media were it not for the business, but I recognize the necessity of it. The Art at the Murray branding, if you will, for all of us in the building really came about as a result of a year of being here and all of us talking to each other saying, do you want to do First Thursday? Yes, let's do First Thursday. Mm-hmm. And trying to get the word out just by doing First Thursdays. And it finally occurred to a couple of us, why don't we just brand ourselves and try to walk behind the brand? You know, for some reason, a logo and a Facebook page, after a year of us banging the drum, trying to be open on First Thursdays, all of a sudden that logo and Facebook page have taken off.
Yes. I love it. I love the page and I love the profiles. I think it's wonderful, because I think there are a lot of people that maybe didn't, you know, venture upstairs during a First Thursday, and they kind of get a taste and can experience, you know, what's going on upstairs, so that maybe they will, you know, then on another First Thursday, walk upstairs and meet the artist. I think it's like you said, it's just another way to welcome people into the space.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And again, we can't stress enough, all of us who are artists in the building have our arms and our doors wide open, because as professional artists, we absolutely understand how off-putting and unwelcoming and mystical being an artist can seem sometimes to the outsider. And that's not our heart at all. You know, as artists, we are attempting to connect with the public, to put things out into the public space that say, here is something thoughtful or beautiful or thought-provoking or controversial even that can start a conversation in the public realm, which kind of in and of itself says we're not trying to hide what we're doing.
Right.
And so you're always, as an artist, struggling with how to get your art in front of eyeballs. And 100% of the time, you are not necessarily doing that because you are looking for buyers. Of course, you need to sell your art.
Yes.
That's how we make our living. But that's not the only reason we're trying to have our art seen. We all strongly believe and are passionate about the ideal that art is elevating. Just fundamentally, yeah. art elevates our entire human experience. And because we are artists who have skin in the game, meaning we're paying monthly rent, mm-hmm. we are on the regular having art supplies shipped to us if we can't find them here locally, mm-hmm. we're spending our hard-earned money trying to be professionals. We feel like we also have a responsibility to find ways to welcome the public. And I can't say enough about how on board the Murray brothers, Steve and Todd Murray, who mm-hmm. own Murray's Jewelers here yes. and own the building, how wonderful they have been as landlords. In fact, we have plans for improving the lighting in the second floor foyer right outside my doors.
Yes.
Before June Arts Walk, we want to begin inviting a guest artist from the community in the tiny little gallery we'd like to create here in the second floor foyer, so that it's not just Murray building artists whose work you can see in studio, but also some other artist from the community that we welcome as a guest.
Oh, I love that. You could get details of all that at the Art at the Murray Facebook page, but where can people get information about you specifically, Carrie? Where's the website they need to go to?
It's very simple, carriewrightsilk.com. And if you don't know how to spell it, it's blazing in neon lights from my from my window.
It is
down
indeed.
Walnut Street.
It is indeed. Well, before we let you go, we couldn't be remiss about the Hoosier Women Artists Program and the honor you received recently. Congratulations on that. And if people are not familiar with that, tell them a little bit about the piece that was selected.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. Mm-hmm. It's one of those huge honors that makes you blush and you know, I'm gonna, oh shucks, let's not talk about it. I was incredibly honored. The piece is titled 177 Pieces in My Dream, and it's mostly a prismatic piece of art, mm-hmm. but it's called 177 pieces because there are 177 tiny little pieces that have been
wow.
of hand-painted silk from my last 16 years of silk painting that have been collaged together in a piece that's roughly about 24 by 36 inches total. That's then machine stitched to watercolor paper so that it can be mounted up for framing. And it's currently hanging in the governor's residence, because First Lady Janet Holcomb chose it as the single piece that she wanted this year to have hanging in her office. So it's very humbling. I'm honored.
Well,
definitely honored.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'll say that. So thank you so much, Carrie, for joining us again. Congratulations on the honor, and very excited to see what Art at the Murray has in store for us in the future.
Us too. Thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Carrie Wright is a professional artist and owner of Carrie Wright Silk Gifts and Gallery in downtown Muncie.
I'm Carrie Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. This week, we're listening back to some of our favorite interviews, like this one with Holly Sims.
Holly Sims is a painter and muralist based in Anderson. She was raised in Greencastle and received a Bachelor in Psychology and Arts Studies from Anderson University in 2009, then achieved an MFA in painting from New York Studio School in 2013. She returned to Anderson University in 2021 as an assistant professor of visual communication and design. And Holly is here with us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We are interested to ask you WAWO, and that is, what are you working on right now, Holly?
What am I working on right now? A few main things I'm working on right now are designs for upcoming mural festivals. So there's a Wayne County Mural Fest happening this summer, as well as the Putnam County Mural Festival. So really just in the design process for those.
So when you say you're in the design process, are you going to create a mural
by yourself or with other people? How's that work?
Yeah, so in Wayne County, I worked with the building owner a little bit to come up with a design, and I'm working by myself on that project. But in Putnam County, that project isn't until September, and I'll be working with the printmaker Matt Reese, and so we're collaborating on a mural. We're both from Greencastle.
Oh, well, can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek of what you're collaborating on, like some of the ideas?
Awesome. Well, Matt and I have painted a lot of birds and flowers, and so we are still collaborating on what specific birds and flowers to use. But the building that we're painting on has a tropical mural on the inside, so on the outside we might go more bright, colorful, tropical feel.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely fun collaborating with another artist. It's actually my first time doing that. So when picking what the imagery is going to be, who's going to paint what style goes where, it's definitely interesting meshing a printmaker with a muralist. I love working with other artists. It's very collaborative.
I do as well. I think that's really fun to talk about how it might look and your color sensibilities and some of the things that are different and that you share. Well, can you tell us a little bit more about some other things that you're doing right now?
Yeah, so I love public art, but it seems like the way I work is in different silos. So I also have a studio practice. I have a studio in Anderson based out of Eastside Studios. It's actually a pottery studio. And so I have my painting studio inside there. And in my studio right now, I'm working on a couple just commissioned pieces. Someone liked I recently did an NBA All-Star mural. And after that mural, someone was interested in that style of work connected with the Pacers. So I'm excited to do a big painting. And then I'm just gearing up. It seems like a lot of things are just at the beginning stages, designing. But I'm also gearing up for a cross-country trip to do some watercolors and oil painting.
Oh, well, that sounds interesting. Yeah. Do you know exactly where you're going to go or just...
Yeah, so I did this last summer as well. A benefit to teaching is that we have the summers to create, and so I'm definitely taking advantage of that time. And maybe oil paint in my car is not the best idea. So this summer I'll be doing a lot of watercolors, and I make my way out to San Francisco and then work my way up the coast.
That sounds like a wonderful trip. And what do you think is one of your biggest inspirations when you make art?
I would say a reason why I'm doing the trip again and what inspires me the most and really gives me energy for the school year is how much color impacts my work. I would say that that's probably a common thread among all the different styles I work, is my attention to color. So as you cross the country, color just shifts, and that's something that I'm really drawn to, and it brings a lot of life to my work. Feels like a lot of the watercolors and oil paintings that I do across the country seem more like color studies. The color of the sky shifts blues as you cross the country. The soil shifts color as you cross the country. So I, on my first trip across the country, I got hung up outside of Denver because all of a sudden it shifted from the mountains and all the green. And then just on the other side, it becomes desert. And so I just ended up spending several days right there because it shifted to oranges and reds and yellows so quickly. And then moving on from there, it shifts again, you know, to like the bright blue sky, open fields of yellows and bright greens. And then as you get to the coast, which was my favorite, starts being like muted blues and like soft sky colors, using a lot more white on my palette. But
nature is a huge inspiration. I noticed in some of your work that I looked at online that you do have quite a palette of colors. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would say that in a lot of my public art pieces, I tend to go pretty vibrant with my color palette. And I think the public really likes that. They love bright color. And I do like to balance it with the dark colors. I think that dark colors really bring to life all the rich colors. So I would say that in my public art pieces, I tend to really push that because that's what spray paint wants to do. And it can do that. And that's something that I can't quite get with oil paint. They're just different. And so I like to use materials in a way that they want to be used, you know, and using spray paint, you really just have to be brave and try it. So I think that there is, a lot of people feel like they can't use spray paint and it's only can be used by a select group of people who really know how to use it or who are only spraying on trains or whatever. And it's just not the truth. It's actually a really accepting community who's willing to like teach me. And it's you just have to be brave and be safe with it, protect your lungs. And it's a really fun tool. It's like picking a different brush when painting with watercolor. You just pick different caps to use. How you hold the can, how fast you move the can also create all different types of mark on the wall. Actually, I taught myself how to spray paint. There's a free wall space on the south side of Indianapolis where a lot of graffiti artists paint. And I remember the first time I did it, I asked a guy who was painting there if I could paint too, even though it's not, I don't know how to do this style. And he was like, absolutely, it doesn't matter. And we need more people like you to come paint. And it really opened a door for me because I didn't know I was invited. And I actually still go paint there regularly to teach myself because it's hard to just practice on a wall, like where do you go to practice? And so it's just a great spot and a really positive vibe happening there.
And I will tell you, an invitation is such an important thing. Mm-hmm. When you realize somebody wants you somewhere and they say, you're invited to be here, please be here.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
And when we're talking about making murals and the way you conceive of them, is there something that you want them to emanate to people who look at them?
That's a good question. I would say that beauty and recognizing I make a lot of my content just large, right? So like larger animals. And so just highlighting certain pieces to nature that people don't always catch when it's small or in a photo. But I'm not necessarily telling a story through my murals. I think that just beauty for the sake of something being beautiful is okay and alluring. And I would say that I'm more that style of muralist. I do intentionally, though, connect with communities and ask them what they want. So it tends to be the content of my murals tends to be have a relationship to the place that it's located. So for instance, the Elwood Panthers, or I did a huge panther, the Fillmore Cardinals, it's a cardinal and so forth.
Yeah, the meaning making then is very strong when you connect it to something that, you know, the people who live there think about daily.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing some of your work in the future. And thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Holly Sims is a muralist and a painter based in Anderson. We spoke to her last summer. You're listening to Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Every week we ask an artist, what are you working on? This week, we're listening to our interview with local artist John Morris.
You may know him from his pre-pandemic Funcy artwork, which began as a campaign to turn a sarcastic name into a positive descriptor of Muncie, otherwise known as Funcy. Or more recently, You may have heard him speak at Gordy's Fine Arts and Framing in downtown Muncie about his collages that were exhibited there. John is interested in the dialectical relationship between what is real and what is a simulation and the post-truth era. Thank you for being here with us today, John.
Thank you, Kara. It's an honor to be here, and I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Of course, we are happy to have you. And we would like you to start out by telling us a little bit about what you're working on. And can you talk a little bit about some of the specifics about what drives your creative process?
Sure. So I've been obsessed with collage for many, many years. And I was a master of Adobe programs early on and decided to challenge myself to kind of go beyond that. And so I started using the color copier 20 years ago, and I would go to Kinko's before FedEx bought it and make copies and do collages and just have fun with it, because it was like more like kind of a equal relationship between the machine and myself, where I could kind of control what was going on. It was an instant kind of whatever I was copying would come right out. And so I would go there at 2 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, didn't matter. I could just go and just use this machine. So a couple of years ago, I went back to it and I started using collages that are derived from comic books. And I really like the dot matrix pattern of the comic books and how they are sometimes printed imperfectly. So there's more of an aura to the kind of the ones that are misrepresented or misregistered with the plates that were used. And then, you know, new comic books are printed using the computer, and it's a CMYK process instead of it being just color plates that were added on. So it's a different kind of look that they have. But my process goes from analog, where I am using a original source material that's the basis of the collage, to digital, which is the copying machine. Back to analog, where it's spit out as a piece of paper that I can assemble into a collage. Then I will take a scan of that, the finished collage, and then put that into the computer again, that it becomes digital, and then use a Photoshop filter to assign basically a pixelated look to that collage, and then that gets turned into the perler bead creations that I brought one today to show you. And so it's this like sandwich process, basically, of digital, analog, back to analog, digital, just depends, but it always ends up being analog, usually 5 steps or so, sometimes even more. But that to me helps synthesize the work into something that I really want to be present and meaningful to the person to see in person, so it doesn't get represented digitally on some kind of web page. Really, it's meant to be seen, and the pixelization of these collages, it becomes basically a way of expressing the digital age in which we reside. And so these are, if you look at the one that I brought today, which our viewers can't see, but it's a portrait.
It's
a portrait of a comic book female's face, and then part of her face has been kind of replaced with a person's body hanging out the edge of her face. Then there's a bunch of there's some kind of car parts and things that maybe you would see in a junkyard. But I'm kind of synthesizing the human form with the machine. And so that's a way of acknowledging this postmodern world.
Yeah, it looks like very intricate beading. I don't know how familiar everyone is with perlers, but I had not seen them before, and it looks very time-consuming. They're very small.
It is. Each perler bead is really a decision. You're trying to, because you're really deciding what goes on there, even though the computer is helping me. It's a Photoshop filter that I use to kind of approximate where things could go. But at the end of the day, the Photoshop colors that are rendered are not exact match of the perler bead palette that I have to choose from. So you have to still make some decisions, and there's a lot of nuance that goes into it. And like, I'm deciding, is this going to be a peach or a pink perler? You know, it's kind of like, you know, you zoom back out and you're like, oh, I need to go with the peach here. But at the end of the day, that's part of the joy of being a creator, is to make those decisions that you think are the sound ones that are going to actually make the work resonate with the viewer. But you have to iron them together. You have to flip them over. It's a huge thing. It's, you know, one was 15,000 beads.
That's so interesting. You know, you're talking about these different dichotomies that you're thinking about. And then you talked about this elaborate process that you go through to get to the imagery. And then as we're talking about just utilizing the perler beads.
Yes.
There's yet another huge layer.
Yes.
Of process.
Yeah, I'm really into process, like meaning and making being inseparable.
So, is there anywhere we can see your work these days?
Well, my work, I haven't posted to Instagram since 2017, unfortunately. But I instead of using the screen, I listen. I like to listen. And I listen to a podcast and work on my stuff. But instead of obsessing over posting something, I just make it. And I want the viewer to meet me halfway where they can come and see the work. And I know that's probably not the best strategy in this day and age, but that's just me being stubborn and, you know.
It's a strategy.
Yeah, it is a strategy. But
thank you so much for being here with us today, John.
Thank you for having me, Kara. I really, really enjoyed it.
It's time for the arts calendar. Kara, why don't you kick us off?
Sounds great. As a part of Ball State's Arts Alive series, Daniel Alexander Jones will be on campus at 7:30 p.m. Friday, January 24th. His body of original work includes plays, performance pieces, recorded music, concerts, music theater events, essays, and long-form improvisations. Jones has been described as creating multi-dimensional experiences where bodies, minds, emotions, voices, and spirits conjoin, shimmer, and heal.
I love that description. I love that. Wonderful. Join the University Singers on January 24th and 25th for the Mid-America Show Choir Championships. High schools and middle schools alike will join the singers for two fun days of entertainment. Competing show choirs will be featured in Emmons Auditorium, and solo competitions will take place right across the street in Sursa Performance Hall. The University Singers will have an exhibition performance each night. BSU.edu is the place to go for more info.
Okay, show choir championship.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of jazz hands, and I'm here for it.
Oh, yeah. On Sunday, January 26th, you can catch the BSU School of Music Faculty Artist Series featuring the Cardinal Trombone Choir. That's at 3 p.m. in Sursa Performance Hall. Enjoy a concert from Professors Chris Van Hoff on the trombone, Kara Chowning voice, Gregory Robbins conducting, Scott Rautenberg jazz piano, and Cassius Goins III jazz percussion.
Dedicated to preserving America's jazz heritage, the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra returns to the Palladium in Carmel at 7 p.m. Sunday, January 26th, with more than a dozen of the finest soloists, ensemble players, and arrangers in jazz music today. Founded in 1988 and led since 1991 by world-renowned trumpeter and artistic director Wynton Marsalis, the big band spends over a third of the year on tour, performing a vast repertoire that ranges from new commission compositions to rare historic works. This concert will include compositions and arrangements by Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Thelonious Monk, and many other greats.
Foodies will be happy to hear that Devour Indie Winterfest is on now through February 2nd at more than 120 restaurants in the Indianapolis area. Enjoy special menus featuring delicious three-course meals for discounted prices. DevourIndie.com has the details, and this weekend, you can also savor Fort Wayne at dozens of restaurants. This event ends January 26th and also includes three-course value-priced meals. Visit FortWayne.com for more info.
I'm so hungry right now. That sounds
Could
so
you
good.
Have a three-course meal?
Have you ever been to a Devour Indie?
I have not.
Oh my gosh, so much fun. So much fun. It's a great way to kind of, if you don't know a lot about the restaurant scene in Indy or now Fort Wayne, you can kind of sample them. You can check them out. And they create special menus, the restaurants do, just for this event.
Like so, a little tasting.
Like here are the three things we're going to showcase that really show you who we are as a restaurant. And then they offer those for like one set price. And so it's a great way to eat around Indy on a budget, really, which I'm all for. Okay. Basketball and theater. You betcha. The Indiana Repertory Theater in Indy is presenting King James through February 9th. During LeBron James's rookie season in Cleveland, two young men, one black, one white, meet and bond over their love for the Cavaliers. Over the next 12 years, their passion for basketball never wavers, even as their lives keep moving in different directions. This play is described as having a warm, surprising, touching comedy feeling, and it's about friendship, loyalty, loss, and of course, the game. IRTLive.com has the details.
The Paramount Theater Center in Anderson will host its first lip sync battle Saturday, January 25th at 7 p.m.
Lip syncing, watching people lip sync is always fun. If you have an event Pop of Culture listeners should know about, let us know at indianapublicradio.org/contact. Then click Pop of Culture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This episode was produced by Luke Jones, who's pretty sure that he can win that lip sync contest with Walk Away by Kelly Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
And was hosted by me, Kara Duquette.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.
And that's our show. This episode.
But I was produced by.
I have to conversation.
I want to do the whole thing like that. This episode was produced by Luke Jones. And was hosted by me. Getting.